Did you hear me? So it's my first presentation after break 7 years. I'm just first oral presentation on the middle atmosphere dynamics, the last one again in Toronto in 2007 on with Siim Amberg. So I'm basically pleased that with folks give me oral spot on this. So the correct title probably I should put on constraining middle atmosphere models by space, both observation and just would like to talk only two modes, zonal mean flow and migrating tides. And I believe you understand after these two talks how difficult to do something with space-borne wind and temperature measurements in MLT regions. But this year, in the beginning, we decided to put together efforts of NCAR folks with Northwest Research Associate people to basically write proposal to think about how we can make a bridge between numerical weather prediction data simulation scheme, bias correction, what we observed in the model when begin compare model with MLT observation, and basically somehow to tune with model data analysis studies, what you just hear before, URS, timed and ORA, and put them in the data simulation framework. So my outline for this talk is will be just brief review of data simulation of operational data in the stratosphere, show typical biases which related to consistency in vertical scales. Next, I would like to just overview research satellite data in the stratosphere, mesosphere, low thermosphere, to get you global view on zonal mean flow and tides, diurnal cycles, how we can constrain them, and just introduce simple possible inverse scheme if we, for instance, have persistent differences between model and data. Can we begin to constrain our whole atmosphere model by this data? And finally, if I have a time, I just give you some ideas how I can transfer with existing inverse scheme and sensitivity studies in the statistical estimation framework and introduce appropriate error metrics for inverse modeling, actually. So just give you some ideas how persistent data model or data differences looks like. Basically, I just put the plot from a wonderful paper of Mark Borash in 1995, which illustrates basically differences between the ground-based data and space-borne measurements of zonal wind around 35 north. It's basically Adelaide MF radar site. And you can see, if you look at for several years, you can see systematic differences over here above 85 kilometers. So you can see basically attenuation of strength of winds in the MF radar measurements. You have continuation of some strong wind patterns in the Hardy. So basically when you begin to use the data for this particular region, you have to make clear case what kind of data use, and you can do a lot of validation studies to put your possible data simulation scheme if you begin to basically simulate several data sets from different sources on the data simulation foundation, which is zero mean errors. So if you look at, for instance, measurements of two optical instruments for this period of time, it's April 22nd, 1993, it's again from Mark Borash paper, so you can see very good agreement between this data set. So basically, unfortunately, this is basically differences between Hardy radar data above 85. It's basically, unfortunately, very short differences, because we were thinking about in the beginning that MF radar will be like radio zone data in the troposphere. So we can do a lot of validation studies for this particular region. But unfortunately, with continuous in time radar techniques has some limitation up to 85 kilometers. And and Charles mentioned that, for instance, diurnal time maximizes 95 kilometers. So in the region of diurnal, maximum of diurnal oscillation, we cannot use in situ measurements to extract tidal motions. This is one one basically caveat to use ground-based networked radar data. So basically the question, when you look at the model data differences, you have basically a couple questions. How to separate data biases from model biases, from model errors. So the answer probably just very general, because there is no particular recipes for this. You should establish model error metrics, do a lot of sensitivity studies, see how uncertain your model parameters, and what the sensitivity your model forecasts with uncertain parameters. And of course, what I mentioned here, you need to do a lot of analysis data-data differences and make appropriate validation and quality control. How to suppress these biases to secure a data simulation foundation, zero mean errors. So one way what basically proposed in the last century in this numerical prediction way, it's basically collaborators made with nice studies to put the data simulation scheme bias correction algorithm. So it's basically simulate data, compute time series, observe minus forecast, extract low frequency persistent component from this time series, associate them with biases, apply bias aware data simulation scheme. The last important feature, I believe, with for this bias aware data simulation scheme, it will be key element is bias propagator scheme. So if you have increment, persistent increment bias in one variable on one component, your model should propagate it to all other model variables. Basically, in the numerical error prediction way, the foundation of which way basically it's just to use statistical estimation to propagate with biases, introducing additional step for the bias correction. Across the streptopause, we have much more issues for data simulation. As mentioned previous to speaker, coverage and quality of data is not so good compared to the nadir viewing satellite. Numerical error prediction algorithms cannot be simply extended for simulation of sparse or less frequent data for tracking fast waves like tides. If you don't have sampling, so you don't have basically, you cannot follow which feature. It would be difficult basically to make a simulation of tidal signature. And the last one is maturity of models. Basically, very high sensitivity, so subgrid physics parameterization, what Charles also mentioned, and I will be make several illustrations with talk. That's why the explorative physically based data of simulation algorithm and adverse schemes, I believe, can be considered first optimized model in the this particular area of at whole atmosphere. And I believe I can show you what current a set of research satellite data you are assigned to Aura will be able to do some first step job for this. But before switching to the upper atmosphere, I just would like to show you how biases looks like in the stratosphere from the surface to the approximately stratopause. So this is basically a picture from the DIG-D paper published in 2001 in Quarterly Journal in proceedings of the WMO conference on data simulation. And what you can see here, basically, this is North Pole, this is South Pole, this is August 2005, and this is zonal mean temperature biases in ERA 40. So the several nice features that we can discuss here, just basically you can see at the polar region you have wavy signatures of the temperature biases. Absolute value goes from 0.5 up to 5 degrees K in this region. And because ERA 40 is just iterational system, so it simulates only only nadir viewing measurements, something like MCA units. It doesn't use any research satellite data that has vertical probing of atmosphere for waves and in temperature, basically. So the next couple of slides, I will be trying to basically explain to give you my interpretation why it happens currently in the operational data sets. But before this, I just would like to acknowledge my colleagues who did and basically investigators who did the nice inverse diagnostic studies in the stratosphere and NMLT, which is basically the main motivation of these studies is to use data, research satellite data, to optimize momentum heat sources diffusion initiated by stochastic eddies and subgrid gravity waves. And I would like to mention the nice feature for which geophysically driven diagnostic studies. It's before simulation, we studies try to diagnose and tend to suppress the large model biases operating with model fission and persistence differences between observation and model prediction. So this is basically my interpretation of stratospheric biases, and I use Sarodza figure from the Sarodza paper. It was nice because GigD paper and Sarodza paper in the same magazine and close to each other, and so basically I pick up figure two from her paper, and here what you have. You have the Jacobians of MCU11 channel, which is, you can see, very, very deep in the pressure. So it's couple pressure scale height. And here you can see the vertical correlation, what basically data simulation folks in the stratosphere use. So this is correlation length of the forecast temperature. So if you look at the ratio of these two scales, it will be much more than one. It's approximately between 10 and 20, depending on the situation. And so when you begin to use radiance measurements and begin project with radiances misfit with these Jacobians on the data analysis of your model, you begin mix two different scales. It's basically large width of Jacobians and short vertical correlation length. And you got rank deficient increment adjustment of a temperature analysis. This will be wavy temperature analysis. And in the polar region, we basically have a lot of data, very dense area of coverage and CO. So it's basically persistent increment in the temperature equations. It sounds like orographic waves, gravity waves, initiated in polar latitudes every second. So that's why perhaps you have these biases, but this is basically my fast interpretation of this. And if you look at the math, it's basically you can avoid this if you do single value decomposition of Jacobians of MCU radiances, and if you pick up only the leading singular vectors, and you begin adjust only layer average temperature without mixing scales of your correlation and brightness temperature. So you cannot in the analysis mix with two scales. If you begin to mix with two scales, you get a mess. And basically this is probably one of the reasons why we have, potential polar biases in the operational data analysis. And this is because my current job basically is tropospheric data simulation. I just decided to pick up one slide from the tropospheric chemistry to illustrate with basically a rank deficient projection of the radiance misfit on the carbon monoxide innovation vector. So you have here. But I use this example because the Jacobians of CO has this similar vertical width like MCU11 temperature Jacobian. And so if you begin to make a projection from radiance mean fit of emotive data with Jacobians, and you forget to do the scale consistent estimation or SVD analysis of this projection, you can get also wave structure in the tracer field. But if you do scale consistent projection of your radiance vector to the retrieval levels, you can adjust only your tracer field or temperature field bounded by these Jacobians. And the nice feature of, for instance, SVD decomposition если в виде composition analysis projection radiance misfit on the vertical retrieval grid, it's this the natural tail tapering of your vertical correlations and upscale your variances to the scales visible to your instruments. But unfortunately, this instrument doesn't help us in the NLP region because basically the width of this Jacobian is just 10-20 kilometers, and you know from the Charles and from Roof talk that diurnal type vertical wavelength is 24 kilometers. So 20 kilometers cannot, width of Jacobians cannot help you to sample vertical wavelength of diurnal types. So that's why we need basically multi-instrument satellite limp unit observation to resolve this structure. And this is just example how MLS average internals looks like in the basically in the coverage of MCU 11 channels. So this instrument, this vertical resolution can provide us information about vertical structure and wave dynamics, which we are looking in the stratosphere and mesosphere. And I just put here a remarkable example how three satellite data sets in the polar region consistent to each other. This is 2005, last day of January. This is 2006, last day of January. This is 2005, last day of January. This is Shordov, this is Saber, this is MLS. And you can see basically very nice correspondence between these three instruments. And basically if you plot the scatter plot between these instruments between say 10 kilometers up to 60 kilometers, your slope will be very close to one. So we can rely on this data, on research satellite data, which provide us with vertical coverage. And just example that how the satellite data can basically frequently diagnose biases in the GEOS-5 analysis. Look at here, GEOS-5 for these days, very good, do very good job below strata powers. But above, it's a big woman. And it probably can be explained because the top lid of a GEOS-5 is just 80 kilometers. It's not whole atmosphere model. But disadvantage, of course, with limp-unit measurements, it's limited sampling because we don't have horizontal scales. So localized waves are not fully resolved, and for data simulation studies, we need to filter with waves because with waves will be not supported by models, actually. So this is, I just skipped because this is again picture of the sampling, local solar-type sampling. If you look at the Saber sampling, you have only two local solar times for a given day. But what I would like to point out, if we look at the, what Charles also shows, if you look at the special sampling for given day, we can see tides. You see with the steady wind components for March 20, 2004, descending motion, you can see basically in the meridional wind especially, you can see nice feature of a diurnal tide. And so the idea basically is as follows. Even if we don't have a full local solar time coverage, we have very good special global coverage. Can we use this special coverage for given day to begin to extract tides? And of course it's possible only for meridional winds. It's impossible for temperature and zonal winds because in this component you have a mixture of tidal signal and the zonal wind component. So basically, just the next slide is just overview of the three techniques of extraction of tides from the satellite data. First technique I call special least square fit, which is basically introduced in 1994 by Mark Bourash. He basically used 1-1 mode, and he fit 1-1 mode to the Hardy data and get day-to-day variation of 1-1 mode of diurnal migrating tides. More later, Dave Ortlund basically make generalization of these techniques, and it's called generalized half modes. Basically, it's more sophisticated half modes comparing to the classical modes, and include dissipation, effect of winds, temperature gradients, And you basically can use model, generate with half function and project on with half function where tidal signal. And this is basically results of Dave Ortlund for Hardy timed for 1993 and 2004. And this is basically annual cycle of Hardy and timed. And you can see very nicely how 11 years later, the Hardy and tidy, diurnal tide definition, quite consistent. So you can also just think about what Ruth talked about, the day-to-day variability of tidal amplitudes, and you can basically, for your analysis, if you would like to extract tides and evaluate zonal mean flow, you can select the quiet period for tidal amplitudes using twist techniques and begin to extraction. The next is basically what Ruthie and Charles introduced, which is temporal least square fit collecting data over 50, 60 days, maybe more, to just do least square fit and to make the tidal analysis. This is very good techniques because it's, even it has aliasing, it's basically moderate technique. It doesn't introduce perhaps some spikes if you have some peculiarities with the data. The last technique is what I call basically both special and temporal least square fit with hard and windy data. This is basically what we did almost 10 years ago in State University of New York in Stony Brook. So we basically use tidal model, also derive the basis function for given tidal model, and after that project satellite-borne tidal observation on our basis function, but we use also tidal equation and consistently adjust some parameters in tidal model to reproduce tides which close to observation. Basically, we did for meridional winds. After that, we calculate correspondent, basically, it's balanced, tidally balanced, if you want, scheme. So we use one component where we have strong signature of the diurnal oscillation. We estimate with amplitudes of diurnal oscillation, and afterward we use inverse scheme that propagate misfit between observed and simulated tides to our components. And we also adjust the parameter which is called effective tidal dissipation, which gives us basically reasonable fit for tides. This is just example of the same semi-diurnal oscillation of diurnal tide amplitudes in the meridional wind component of Adelaide, what you see previously from the Mark Borash paper. And you can see that the Hardy definition of tides with this line using tuned mechanistic tidal model concept from the MF radar approximately at 90 kilometers deviates as a factor of 2 or 3, depending on the year. And this is just another illustration for this methodology. If we use basically windy, hardy and windy data, here we use here only daytime hardy wind measurements, meridional wind measurements to adjust our tidal variables in our model. Here we use both hardy and windy measurements. You can see sensitivity of these results. We have due sensitivity, but in general you can see this is basically we approximately on the same planet. If we do, for instance, direct least square fit collecting data over 36 day as yours measured, so we cannot basically extract tidal signature from the zonal mean component. It's basically noise, because aliasing of zonal wind component and tide is very much large. So this is basically why these techniques work, because if you look at the MLS data and compare our tidal amplitudes in the stratopause level, you can see perfect agreement at this level between model results, which is model results, and this is MLS 93 at 53 kilometers. So if you look at the seasonality, so you can see approximately the same seasonality for diurnal migrating tides. So this is basically, we have the right source, And what we need adjust propagation of tides and influence of our parameters. And I skip this slide because I don't have time. And how to relate with decomposition So basically, you can do several ways. You can do basically decomposition of on diurnal, semi-diurnal tide adjusted model, calculate the superposition within, compare our different local stall at this time. And you can see basically very reasonable agreement in this case. But for the zonal component, it's much more important. You can basically, after evaluating tides, you can remove these tides from the your composites, and you can estimate zonal mean flow. And this is residual zonal mean flow. And this is from the Hardy data. And this is daytime average zonal mean flow. Basically, this is what Charles shows using his CMM exercise. So basically, this technique allows you basically to adjust, to derive not only the 24-hour tides, but also zonal mean flow, which is quite important. And basically, I don't have time to continue on this. And just show you the last slide, which is annual cycle of zonal winds from four empirical wind models and two vacuum runs with different gravity wave parameterization. This is equator, this is 40 degrees north, and this is Europe. This is HWM93. This is what I call what I did this year, just extracting tides and saving the zonal mean flow. And this is Partnyagin's model, global empirical wave model, which is basically a combination of MF radar and satellite data, just compilation of. And this is the vacuum runs. The point is basically, you see here, especially around equator, these two models basically based on the, even this, we have in this particular region very broad transition of the eastward component from 100, which is strong. In the vacuum runs, you basically have very narrow propagation of this. So this is basically indication of potential model biases in the zonal wind components. And this is biases probably due to gravity waves, because if you basically make the changes in your gravity waves parameterization, it will be quite different. Thank you.